Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the review of Rally Sweden 2024 here on Spin the Rally Pod, brought to you by dirtfish.com. Oh boy, we've got a lot to talk about. Snow, 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 snow. We've got people yonder, but joining us on the podcast, it is the excellent David Evans and the marvellous George Donaldson. Morning, boys.
Good morning,
Lisa. Morning, David.
Morning, George.
Happy and well. Oh, yes. You were at home this weekend, David. What was going
like,
on?
I don't like the sound of George's enthusiasm.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot coming now, isn't there, Lisa?
Did anybody sleep after all of that at the weekend?
You just know I will never be welcomed into a team's hospitality area ever again after this. And I am going to Safari Rally, so I might actually attenuate what I say slightly.
We had a little bit of a WhatsApp chat over the weekend, George and I, and you know, we'd sort of touch briefly on the politics, and we won't go into any of that because obviously we're going to discuss all of that right now or in the next hour or so. But George, you just called it absolutely right when you said, you know, on particularly on Friday, when it was like all of that, blah, 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 but what an amazing day's sport. And it was. And, you know, that was just the point. It was fantastic. What a great event.
Everything within the regulations as well. No, there's nobody, I mean, it's okay, you're taking liberties with what some people might think is the sporting value, but actually, they're wrong, actually.
Hold that thought.
And so it begins.
We're going to get sucked into the discussions of metaphorical and real snowdrifts, but we've got a lot to get covered. But I think we can still squeeze in a little of the fever from Rally Sweden. Let's get a bird's eye view from someone experiencing their first time in the snow. Out there for dirtfish.com alongside Colin Clark and cameraman Elliot Bernard was James Bowen, experiencing it for the first time north of the Arctic Circle. Put your interview hat on and take it away, Elliot.
Thank you, Lisa. Now, James, we're here finally at the hotel by the airport here in Stockholm. 7 hours back down from Umeå. What are your thoughts? What are your highlights, mate, from your first event with Dirtfish on the ground?
Yeah, I've had a little bit of time to think about it now, I suppose. That is definitely a long old drive. I mean, it's been an incredible experience, Elliot. I mean, from the moment we landed, really, it was a different place, a different world. You know, that drive north in the blizzard, basically, as it was. Couldn't see the road at times. You know, it was like, hey, welcome to Sweden. And, you know, that kind of set the tone for the weekend. The conditions were a factor the whole time. And just being on the ground in that kind of really heavy snow of Friday, you know, it just creates an eerie environment when you're out there in the forests. You know, we spoke to a few local residents on sort of the tiny little roads that these stages go up and down, and one of the guys I spoke to was saying, well, last year he could hear the rally cars from absolutely miles away, but this year he couldn't hear them at all because there was so much snow on the ground and in the trees just absorbing all that sound. So yeah, I think those conditions were something we'd not seen on Rally Sweden for a long time, and for us kind of out there, once you sort of drive out north of Umeå, it really is like being totally in the wilderness and with that kind of heavy, thick snow. I mean, we got to roads that were just impassable at times. It's a proper adventure up there.
Yeah, Yeah, and I mean, you've been working with Dirtfish for a short while now. You've been at home writing stories, covering Dirtfish Live Centre, putting in a shift there. But how is this different when you're out here on the ground on an event? What is the main differences, and what are your takeaways?
Yeah, I suppose it's context. You sort of, you live and breathe the event, and you feel kind of the ups and downs a bit much more. And you're out there with the fans, you're out there kind of at stop lines and in the stages. You just feel a huge amount more connected to it, I suppose. And you know what we do at Dirtfish, you know, we're not just there to cover what happens. You know, we're out there venturing into the stages when we can to try and get, you know, these little snippets of interviews and pictures with drivers as they happen. And yeah, it's a totally different experience. But yeah, it's a pretty cool job, I must say. How about you, Elliot? How was your? It's your third time. Is that right?
Yeah, third time.
Earlier this year. How was it compared to the last couple of years?
You're bang on though with what you say about me. I mean, as I told you, we ended up at this junction on Saturday night, outside this house with a marshal and the house owner, and it was the exact same two to the people I'd spoken to the year before. You know, it was 1 year apart, same stage, same afternoon. And we had a little catch-up. How's life? You know, what's changed in a year? This is how lucky we are at Dirtfish to get out, get on the stages, feel the event, see the event. And, yeah, we really cannot take that for granted. It is awesome. I really enjoyed this event. It was very sunny last year, but this year, yeah, we've got a lot of snow. We did do a bit of walking through snow, James, didn't we, on the way to find Katsuta? You led the way for a lot of that through thick snow. You had your own little moments yourself using the snowbanks.
Yeah. Well, you've got to use the snowbanks on Rally Sweden. I was learning from the best. But yes, we made an attempt to find Takamoto Katsuta. Anyone who was following along with Dirtfish Live Centre would have kind of seen a little bit of what we were up to, and I think there'll be a bit more to come. Maybe in the behind-the-scenes video. There'll be on YouTube shortly for that. Yeah. But yeah, essentially we're following spectator paths, paths to spectator areas through the woods and then alongside the edge of the stage.
Yeah.
And then sort of the path ran out. And we had to make our own path through about 10, 15 centimetres of snow. So unfortunately we didn't quite make it to Taka. He was kind of let out of the stage after the final car had been through. But that's part of the adventure of what we do, and that's why, you know, sometimes it massively pays off and sometimes it doesn't, but we've got a good story, so that's something at least.
Yeah, exactly. We always get a lot of comments, you know, how are Dirtfish there, how are Dirtfish always on the scene of whatever dramas that happen, whether it be Rose section on the stage. Sometimes we don't get so lucky, like this time, and yeah, Colin's face was a bit of a picture when you realise we're going to have to walk almost half an hour, wasn't it, back through the snow.
It felt like a lot more than that.
And it was a bit tougher once we saw the people on the snowmobiles going past us.
Yeah, we've got to get one of those next time.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know who we need to write to get one of those.
I'm sure Colin knows some people. He'll know some people somewhere. So has this made, you know, you're going to come away from this event with so much fever. You meet awesome people. Tell us about Victor, who we met on the recce.
Victor was interesting, lovely man. So what happened was we when we are doing our recce, we sort of have to pick and choose the stages we go to try and catch the drivers for recce interviews, and for various reasons we'd chosen to go to the shakedown stage, and just so happened as we got there we saw an absolute sea of Norwegian flags, and we were there maybe 10-15 minutes before the first of the recce cars for the Priority One drivers came in. So we had time to sort of go and get ourselves set along the stage and met Victor, who was a lovely Norwegian man who's been spectating for many years, but had set up his own little camp. He had his hat of champions, as he called it, as a hat with a Norwegian flag on it, and he was getting signatures of only people who had been world champions.
Yeah.
Mm. And unfortunately, he was waiting for Sebastian Ogier, and had to inform him that he might be waiting quite a while.
You had to let him down there, didn't you? You had to let him down.
Yeah. Always check the entry list.
Always check the entry list.
That would be my advice.
You were on the entry list story and itinerary story this rally, weren't
you? I did,
so it was fresh in the memory, but
fresh
I think
in my mind,
most of us knew Ogier wasn't going to be there, but not Victor, sadly.
But he did get Kelly. He did get Oit, and then we told him that Will Crichton was on the entry list, and he's a junior world champion, so he got the signature on Victor's hat as well. But Victor took a shining to you, Elliot, and he even let you sit in his Volvo to warm up.
Yeah. Now, I say let me sit in the Volvo. He forced me into his car, Victor, which HR, there's no worries. There's nothing to be aware of here. But, yeah, I made the off comment that my feet were quite cold and was quite comfortable by the fire. But no, Victor said, no, sit in the car, it's going to be quite warm.
Victor insisted.
And I nearly missed a few recce cars because of that. Everyone's shouting at me, get out the car, there's a car coming. But yeah, so I couldn't really reject Victor and his kindness.
No, but these are the sort of characters you meet. You know, I feel like Victor's a proper rallying guy.
He's
the sort of guy that you're only going to meet on a rallying event when you're kind of, you're right out into the forest and into the trees, and proper hardcore fans like Victor. So that was a great.
And that's what I'd recommend if you are coming to any WRC round as a spectator, as a fan. Get out to the stages, but be around for recce, be around in service, be around as close as you can get to stop lines. There's so much more to the rally than the race, and that is our live centre slogan. That is the epitome of what we do at Dirtfish. And you saw it firsthand this weekend. Anything else you saw? Did you see any emotions from drivers? Any things that you wouldn't see through working at the event from home in particular? What about the Umea Super Special Stage? Red Barn Arena?
The Red Barn Arena. Red Barn Arena is cool. They run it 4 times over the weekend.
Yeah. Make use of it, don't they?
They do make use of it. And it's a good atmosphere in there. It's not totally as crazy as you might expect from other spectator stages. It's not a stadium for the 60,000 people like we had on the Acropolis Rally all those years ago, but it's a fun atmosphere. There's a lot going on, there's a lot of families out there. They've got this massive snow hill in the middle of it from which you can see pretty much the whole arena.
Mm.
And lots of kids up there practicing with their sledges going down the hill. You had a little slide down there, and so did Colin Clark, but you'll have to wait. Oh no, that video's on Twitter, isn't it?
That will be on our X.
Or
Twitter, and in the behind the scenes as well. Yeah, Colin made me crash test that one, didn't he?
Because, yeah, that's the bit you don't see.
No, and I got soaking. Not good. But I personally, I've been lucky enough to go to a lot of super specials in the last couple of years. I like what they do with that, the commentary, the music, the fires everywhere, all the tractors galore. If you're into your tractors, get yourself
lots of
the Umea Super Special.
And they make a big thing of the jump competition.
Exactly.
And we talked to Oliver Solberg, I think, on Friday night, and he was very, very proud of setting the new record of 39 metres.
Yeah.
And then we were standing with Oliver Solberg on Sunday when Thierry Neuville broke the record and lost half of his car in the process. And Oliver was not pleased.
Look out for that in the bloopers, guys. I was lucky enough to be rolling when that happened. And, I was rolling a little bit as well when he went up to Thierry and swore at him when he walked past. I won't repeat what he said, but he wasn't happy at him for beating his jump record. Thierry didn't seem to know what had happened, though, but Oliver was keeping tabs on it, that's for sure.
Yeah, Thierry was classic Thierry. Wasn't bothered, looked cool as ever. But 40-metre jump, that's pretty good.
Yeah, massively. And, big fan of the Red Barn Arena. Good atmosphere. That's how super specials, I think, should be done most of the time. Make it very accessible. Lots of viewing points. Big hospitality area as well. Run it as many times as possible. And it's a proper stage. We saw what happened in there Saturday night. It could have been Malcolm Wilson's worst birthday present in history, probably, couldn't it?
It very nearly was. On the big screen, seeing that unfold. Yeah, you're right. It's a proper stage. And even the corners in the arena itself, the proper corners. We saw Elvin Evans smash into a snowbank on the very
costing
on the power,
the power stage.
Stage,
didn't it? That whack.
Yeah, it's not. It's a tricky stage. And a good one to watch.
Yeah. And I know, obviously, in depth in this podcast, there's bound to be some deeper dives into the main news angles of the rally, but what are the couple biggest news takeaways that you have that you'd want to summarise in it? Have you got three or four off the top of your head that maybe the guys are going to go further into?
Yeah, I think Taco is the one that really stands out for me.
Yeah.
Just the kind of the disappointment of that battle just beginning to unfold and then suddenly it was over. You know, that's really unforgettable. Friday was just crazy. It's probably one of the craziest days we've seen for a long time. Yeah, two world champions taken out in the same stage.
Yeah,
absolutely crazy. And then Friday afternoon with the Rally 2 driver, Georg Lindmay winning an overall stage. You know, these are things that do not happen. So, yeah, I guess those would be the main storylines to take away for me. And of course, EP. I mean, who can honestly say that they're not absolutely thrilled for him?
Yeah,
I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, and dare I say the P word, points. We had a bit of a chat about this on Live Centre earlier. We'll save the detail for George. I imagine he'll have plenty to say. But what are your thoughts quickly?
Yeah. Don't know if I can do that quickly, Alex.
Well, let's not. Yeah. Let's leave it to the other guys.
It's certainly, if Monty didn't deliver the talking points we expected about the point system, Sweden has, I think you've got plenty to debate there. But we'll leave that to the other guys.
Yeah, we will indeed. Well, we will hand now back to the other guys, back in the studio, as they say. But James, final sign-off from Sweden. How keen are you to do another event now? You must be. Well, you want to sleep first, I imagine.
Sleep for a few days, and then yeah, let's do it all again. Why not?
One thing I will say before we go, James was in charge of the long read this rally, so has put together all of his thoughts in detail, where you actually can get a bit more of his opinion than we're getting now. But you dive into everything we've talked about.
Yeah, it's on the website right now.
You've been working on it through the weekend. I'm looking forward to reading it. So yeah, where will they find that, James?
Dirtfish.com.
Dirtfish.com. Back to you guys.
Well, I think the boys have, yeah, I mean, we do need to talk about Katsuta. We need to talk about the point system. But David, George, we've got to start at the top. We've got Thursday, excellent start to the rally, as it always is in Sweden. Friday, well, I ran out of paper, and the snowbanks, I absolutely love snowbanks because they just deliver every time. Saturday, we had the action with Katsuta, and Sunday, we can talk about the point system. So I think we need to go through this on a day-to-day roundup. Do you think that works? Should we start with Friday?
Can do.
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. And Friday was telegraphed, wasn't it, from Thursday night when that snow started to fall.
It was written.
Absolutely. And there is absolutely nothing you can do first on the road. You are going to be crucified. You're clearing the snow, and particularly the snow tires that the cars have got these days, or you know, the only option tire that the cars have got. You come from Monte Carlo, where you have a choice of four tires, into Sweden, where you've got one. And these tires just don't clear.
Sorry, David.
No, George, I was about to say to you, the tires don't clear the snow in the way that, you know, the tires on your Mini in Sweden would have done.
My Mini's not a good example. The tires I had in Mini were like the tires these guys are using now, actually.
Right.
Basically, they were normal 10-inch Mini winter tires that we managed to drill holes in and put studs in. It was a very tenuous business. Didn't really work that well at all. I remember the guy coming along they come along with a little template to put over the tire to count the studs in. And they do that very, very diligently. Not every stage, but like very frequently, like maybe every second or third stage. And the guy came to us and you have to turn your front steering wheel, your front wheels, so you can get a look at it. And he just looked at it and walked away because there wasn't a single stud on the tire. There was. There'd be maybe 10 studs left, but they weren't on the bit that showed up for him. So we were running studless right at the end of the rally. Right at the end of the rally, probably about halfway through, we had no studs left, really genuinely no studs left. And we still finished. And far from last. And still overtaking cars and stages, being driven by.
So you know what conditions were like this weekend, then?
Well, absolutely. That first event we did was quite snowy and a little bit melty. That was 1983. But just before we hark back to that, the tires that they're now running are these 15-inch. We're on 15-inch gravel tires, and they're very wide. They're very stable, and they no longer have these incredibly narrow winter tires, which you used in the snow or the ice. The difference between an ice tire and a snow tire was the ice tires, believe it or not, had the studs further into the tire, so that they were more stable in the tire. And the snow versions of the same had the stud left a little bit proud, so that it could dig down through the snow and reach the ice. But also, they were about one third of the width. If you look back at the historical photographs of the cars when you used to see them at the trotting track at Fagerstad in Karlstad. Fagerstad being the ice trotting track, and the cars used to run round side by side. The tires were literally probably about 50 millimeter wide at the tread area. I jest you not. I mean, if they weren't 50 millimeters wide, they were 55 millimeters wide. It was incredibly small area that the tyres contacted the ground in order to make the ice purchase. So when it was snow, yes, it affected it, of course, greatly, but they had solutions for it. And remember, you could change tyres after every stage.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with that. We managed to do it then. And then last point on that, which detracts a little bit from the entire conversation, but it does lead into Colin's favourite topic of points and entertainment and what's the point of it all, that the first special stage was the Fagerstad trotting track, which people will remember now, but if you go back into the 70s, the mid-70s, before my involvement, even, and I'm old, the cars ran four cars on the start line, and they did two or three laps, flat out. No co-drivers, and that was a special stage.
Wow.
Get that, David?
Sounds like fun.
If you're looking for entertainment, there you go.
Absolutely, but what about Friday's entertainment, George?
Friday's entertainment. Okay, sorry, stick with Friday. So we had that problem. They were all going to... So basically, the first cars on the road really just were genuinely struggling.
So Elfyn Evans.
Elfyn Evans, 28th quickest, 28th overall on the stage, on stage five. And then he went first on the road for the next stage. And actually, I think he was 25th quickest on that one. So that was 42 Bratby, and then stage... six, I forget the name of it actually. Norby it was. Mm. And that was just 12Ks. That was the one he ran first on the road for. And what a massive risk. He went up to that stage thinking, okay, I've got a little line to follow, and your whole mindset is set on, you know, how you're going to drive the stage. And then all of a sudden Thierry Neuville doesn't pitch up. Yeah.
And that's at the heart of this is what we've got to discuss here. Okay. That whole issue. We've literally sent our story live this morning with further discussion of exactly what happened on that Friday. And just George, the one thing I've done, I've tried to do to bring a little bit more analysis into this story,
mm-hmm.
Is talk about the time. So I'm sure you've done this, but I'll just run and if I've got this wrong, please shout at me. But from what I can understand, Neuville was first on the road for five stages. So that meant he I think he did 37 miles, something like that, across those five stages. Now, just give me a moment because I have actually lost that. Right, got it. So, and I'll read it. Between stages two and five, when the Monte Carlo Rally winner was first on the road, the number 11 Hyundai cleaned 41 miles of stage at a cost of 1 minute 15. That's obviously to the leader. That's a loss of around 1.9 seconds per mile. So the three stages that remained on Friday meant he was going to clean the road for another 25 miles. That would have cost him around 54 seconds.
Oof.
So... Mm-hmm. He actually lost, I think, 57 seconds or something. He lost 55.8 seconds. But he had the bonnet pin come up, so that would have cost him certainly a handful of seconds. But the big point here is that everybody's kind of saying, well, firstly, you know, we need to underpin all of this conversation with the fact that Thierry Neuville had a fuel pressure problem. That's what happened. That's what he says happened. That's what the team said happened. what we're looking at here now is the potential for gamesmanship and whether it would actually.
Can I just interrupt you there? Can you just tell us what a fuel pressure problem means, and especially as we're talking about hybrid cars now as well?
George can get to that bit in a sec, but basically the car wouldn't fire up.
Okay.
There were a couple of things that were interesting about when the car wouldn't fire, but fundamentally we need to actually look at the time that Elvin lost, because Elvin was first on the road. So there's a bunch of people that were saying, well, you know, whether or not he did this on purpose or whether it was a genuine problem, he didn't really gain anything. Well, actually he did, because across those 25 miles, Elvin lost a minute and 22. So already, compared to the 55-odd seconds that Thierry lost, Thierry's 30 seconds up. So it would have been a good idea. Now, the other issue that everybody seems to be coming to us with is that when you can hear Thierry trying to fire the car, it's like the ignition's not on, because there's nothing. It's not even turning over, is it, George? It's just there's nothing there. So
I've confess I have not heard that particular little bit of a loop. So I'm not totally familiar with that one.
But I've listened and watched.
I've heard
again.
All the comments.
And it just doesn't seem right. And then suddenly it does fire. Fundamentally, what were they looking for with a fuel pump under the bonnet when the fuel pump is in the tank in the boot? I don't know. So. Fuel pressure problem, George. What?
Yeah. Okay, so the high pressure and low pressure pumps. So the low pressure pump is just making sure that fuel comes from the back, that the tank at the back, usually in the tank or very near the tank, right at the bottom of the tank, usually, well, could be in these cars possibly and probably very inaccessible. I've not seen the cars. It switches on and it pumps fuel from the tank forward to the, at low pressure, probably just... 3 to 5 psi, maybe as much as half a bar, 7 or 8 psi. Higher volume pump, lower pressure, and it just pressurizes the fuel behind the main high pressure fuel pump, which on the common rail system is whatever pressure that's at. It's considerably more, and that keeps the car in fuel. So. Failures of these things are not incredible, and it's a self-repairing fuel pump. I'm going to buy a Hyundai fuel pump now because I like self-repair. That's good. That'll save everybody a fortune. Basically, I think, it's not impossible. I remember 2 years ago, so look, I'm going to put both sides of the argument here. 2 years ago, at the end of the big stage in the Suswa stage in Kenya, Thierry came to the end of the stage, stopped about a kilometre, not even a kilometre after the stop line, before he got to the main road, a nice quiet spot where I happened to be standing, hoping that people would stop there. Thierry stopped to do the work on his car. He wanted to do, make sure there was no dust in it, get it all ready, and he then couldn't start the car. Yeah, and it went on and on. He had spark plugs out. It looked like it was going to be fatal. It looked like it wasn't going to start. And he was going on to the next stage, and time was running, and it went 15, maybe even 20 minutes. He had spark plugs out. He put them back in, tried to fire it, and then all of a sudden, we noticed there was a little bit of smoke coming out of the exhaust, but you couldn't really hear the engine firing. And then he stopped and he spoke to his engineer again, and then he tried again with, I can't remember what he did, but he tried something else. I think he probably spun it over with the fuel pump switched off and then on again. And all of a sudden it started to fire very, very slowly on one cylinder, then two, then three, and then four, but very, very roughly. And there were clouds of oil smoke, and I mean smelling of engine oil and fuel and just... an absolute fog of smoke out the back of the car. You'd have said the car was on fire. If you looked at it from a distance, you'd have said the car was on fire. But he got it fired up and he drove away. And he drove away with smoke pouring out of it. And my opinion was that the engine was blown. Some aspect of the engine was blown. Maybe a head gasket was away because it could have been water in it. There was no smell of coolant. So that kind of suggested it wasn't that. But the amount of smoke, I presume that there was a catastrophic failure in the engine, allowing oil into the cylinder somehow. and he was going to, you know, stop on the next road section or the next stage. And he didn't. He continued on until he broke his suspension on the last day. So that's the first thing to say, that something like that has happened before. So there you are, in Hyundai's favour or in Thierry's favour. There's an actual classic example that I've witnessed that has happened before. The next point is, what's wrong with doing this? The drivers, up until the early 2000s, even probably the mid-2000s, were always playing these games on the way into a road section and sorting it out. And it's only really become an issue because of the, well, no offence to anybody, the slightly puritanical approach of Toyota saying, we're not going to do team orders. Yeah. Does that include no strategy? Because honestly speaking, the way that they harp on about it, it almost sounds like each driver's free to do what they want. But that's not the case. There's team orders and there's team strategy. Mm. Yeah. Now, I think what Hyundai did was protecting themselves from the, well, let's call it, let's be topical here, a sort of snowflake element that seems to think that trying to take any sort of advantage within the current regulations that you can is absolutely reprehensible on the event. Doing it on the event in the sporting sense is awful. Well, they don't seem to think it's bad for them to spend vast amounts of money and just millions and millions and millions of euros every year developing their car, more than, say, Malcolm can. That's not fair. Yeah, if you like, in that sort of snowflake sense. So bottom line is, I think what happened was Thierry saw an opportunity, and just to put it to bed, he thought, we'll make this look good. He may have even done it himself without the team's knowledge. Highly unlikely, but it's not impossible. And why wouldn't he? He's a young man that's determined to win the world championship. Why would you give away any chance you've got? So basically, he potentially feigned a fuel problem at the fuel port, at the fuel restop in front of Elfin, so that the ground's been laid. And then up near the stage, you can't start the car for a very convenient, exactly what you needed, 4 minutes. So it wasn't 5 minutes or 6 minutes. It was just 4 minutes, exactly what you would take on that penalty.
That's the bit, isn't it, George? That convenience factor that you can't get away from. And it's that convenience factor that started all of this debate. But everything that you've said, I have to agree with. I can totally see Toyota's point that they want this championship fought out on the stages, but not everybody has the same feeling as them. And no rules have been broken here. And, you know, the example that
No rules have been broken.
You know, and there's so many examples of this, of drivers just slowing down, of stopping, of Bernsey having the puncture. Was it a puncture? Probably not a puncture in Australia, so that he could then pull over in a control and force Tommy Mäkinen to go in front of him.
Yeah, that was very edgy. That resulted in a rule change.
Yeah, it did. But, you know, until those rules change, you play to them. Yeah. You know, you
absolutely. It's part of the game.
You absolutely do. And it's not even, you know, I kept trying to think, is there a rugby analogy here? You know, one of my absolute heroes is Richie McCaw, one of the finest, absolute finest forwards that would ever play world rugby. And he was him and Martin Johnson, always at that absolute limit of what they could get away with.
To the letter of the law.
And sometimes, Lise, over the letter of the law, if they thought the ref wasn't watching, there might be a little bit of shenanigans.
That's your job. That is your job.
Well, guys,
absolutely.
Yeah. Easy with these rugby analogies now.
But the point is, you know, the ref didn't turn any blind eyes here at all. Everything, there was nothing illegal done.
No, there was nothing. I think it was, honestly speaking, really, really smart. Unbelievably hard in the current environment. It's quite a hard thing to do, but Swedish Rally was filled with drivers hiding down roads, and in all probability Jari Matti's done it himself.
Yeah,
you know, in all probability he was part of that era, an early part of that era, but he was already starting to show. Well, I mean, he certainly, his teammates and the people around him would have been doing it at the time he was involved. You maybe don't like it, but that's the rules, you know. Until they make But there used to be another regulation which sat there, and I have searched for it, and I can't actually find it deep within the sporting regs. It might even be in the sporting code. But the clerk of the course used to have the power to set the running order, reset the running order at any point during an event. And I remember talking to Gary Connolly about this in Western Australia around that time that Richard made the mistake. And I think he actually did this at one point, or he was certainly going to do it if he didn't do it. But basically, the clerk of the course, in my view, could have stopped the rally at that point. He's seen what's happening, stopped the rally, held Elfin for a couple of minutes, and seen if Thierry came in. Thierry checks in, and he just pops Thierry back in front. Yeah, now the clerk of the course used to have the power to do that, and that would solve that problem entirely if somebody wanted to do it, yeah? Although I think it's a fabulous thing to leave. And, you know, the end game of that was really, really interesting. I worked through the end game if they both started to hold back to see what would happen. And of course, the one to blink first would have been Thierry.
Yeah.
But they were both in a very similar tactical situation. But, you know, one of the team had gone, so they couldn't allow themselves to fall back into the clutches too far. The Rally 2 cars were in danger of taking a shitload of points from them, so they couldn't allow themselves to be dragged back into minutes of that. But they could do maybe up to a minute's worth, which Thierry was quite close to already, really.
But ultimately, what it did was it forced Elfin first on the road, and this is the other aspect.
And the risk. That's the dirty element, David. Because
it risks somebody else's rally, you know. But what it did for me was it brought out the absolute best in Elfin Evans, where we saw an outstanding drive.
Dirt Fish's Women in Motorsport Summit is rapidly approaching. Saturday, March the 2nd, is the big day. But if you're not in Snoqualmie and attending in person, fear not. You can tune in to the live stream on dirtfish.com to watch legends of the sport like Michel Mouton, Pernilla Solberg, Bex Williams, and many more, sharing their success at the sport's highest level.
Snowbanks. Let's talk about Snowbanks and how they swallowed up the hopes of Oit Tanak and Rovanperä.
That it was a surprise for me, a big surprise for me, Kelly, because we spoke to him after Arctic Rally, where he was sensationally quick, and I absolutely expected him to walk away with this event, totally. You know, he'd got the prime place on the road. And he came in super confident and just eager, ready to get back to it.
Yeah.
He'd sat out Monty and done his own thing, and he's got a great year ahead of him. And it just all went wrong.
It did.
And it was the same for Tanak. And, you know, these snowbanks, it's such a fine line, isn't it, George? You know, you can lean on them, and then bop, you're in. You've leaned a little bit too heavily. And maybe there's just a slight change in the shape of the snowbank, and it just pivots the car around, sends the front in, and you're done. And, you know, the perfect snowbank, just at the time you really want it, it just doesn't exist, because, you know, you want strength from the snowbank, but you don't want it to be too hard, because you don't want it to knock corners off the car. But equally, you don't want it too soft that it's going to potentially suck the front of the car in, or just scoop a whole load of snow into the air intake, which is then going to cost you another 30 seconds because you've got to pull over and clear the snow out of the front of the car. So, they both fell foul of, well, their own exuberance / slightly imperfect snowbanks, perhaps.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's not forget the conditions of that snow does increase the jeopardy massively, the chance to be caught out. And when you saw the footage of the way these guys were driving, everybody was having moments and spins and near moments, just as we've already discussed. But basically, you look at those first two stages, stage two and three, the first two stages that morning. So Kalle was leading the rally, but Esa-Pekka had just made a fastest time. and, you know, taking the 1.2 seconds out of him, he would be seeing, you know, great road position, but he's not stretching a lead. You know, Takamoto's just 6 seconds behind him. It's all to play for. Anot Tanak's just pretty well sitting there as well, just, you know, that 6 seconds behind. But I mean, without a doubt, Ott and Kalle wanted to put their signature on the event. So I think Ott was keen to pop in a fastest time, to really maximise every opportunity, knowing that the second pass is not going to be so good. They'd have to make all their advantage there. They maybe hadn't got as much as they thought they were going to get. I mean, Taka, I mean, what an incredible performance on that first morning. Absolutely amazing. And of course, Esa-Pekka, you know, that was also just absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning performance from him. You know, it appeared that the last half of the rally, he cruised to a victory, which he did. But he worked hard from stage one onwards. It was very, very impressive. Well, not from stage one. He didn't go so well in stage one, but from stage two onwards, he did. You know, he beat Kalle Rovanperä. He beat Ott Tanak. He beat Takamoto Katsuta.
And an interesting opinion from Neville, who reckons that regardless of whether Kalle was in or out, EP was still going to win the event. And
yeah,
when I heard Thierry say that, I thought, ooh, that's quite a big call. But actually, it's hard to ignore on the evidence of what we saw in terms of stage times on Friday. Lappi just looked in control. It's then easy to say that everybody pulled a lot of time out of him across the weekend. But Lappi's work was done, really, wasn't it?
It was by
Friday
absolutely.
Night. And then that actually exposes you to a potentially a harder aspect of the sport of trying to manage a lead for 2 days. It's not easy, and it's not easy.
It's a very difficult thing for Esa-Pekka to manage that as well.
That's where we can bring in the difference between how Esa-Pekka, 6 years, 6 months, 19 days since he'd last won a World Rally Championship, and Katsuta, who will have learnt some very hard lessons from how he drove on Saturday, because he was trying, I feel, and pushing a little too hard, and ended up with his car buried in a snowdrift, snowbank.
Yeah.
So Katsuta, let's talk about him because it was, and you said this, George, last week, this was Katsuta's opportunity to score his maiden win.
Yeah, he's still not demonstrated he's got the patience. Yeah, he's not demonstrated the patience, sadly.
I would go along with exactly that because, you know, when I saw, when he took that time on the first one on Saturday morning, you just kind of thought, right, now please, Taka, just steady away here. Don't get carried away. Don't. And we have seen it a few times before. And sadly, it looks as though he did get carried away again. And it's such a shame because he is the loveliest guy. You know, there's definitely a hard edge to Taka as well.
It's not a shame, David. It's not a shame. It's just part of the growth and the building. Look,
he's got to build and he's got to be built.
Yeah. But he is. I see the progression in the guy. Mm. I see the progression in him all the time.
Yeah.
Stand back. I mean, maybe you're almost too close to it to see it, but there's an incredible progression in it.
I agree, but that progression has come over quite a long time now.
That's what motorsport is, you know. Well, look at Tommy Mäkinen. Tommy Mäkinen had his first factory drive, what was it, in 1990 or 91? Yet it was basically 94. Another 5 years,
yeah.
5 years until he got a win with a customer car, almost, really, a sort of an odd little sort of car option he got. And then another year until he got a proper factory drive where he could start to hammer it through and win everything.
Yeah,
and he just gelled with it. So it does take time, and remember they've come into it. They're manufactured rally drivers. You know, Takamoto always, you know, wants to be a rally driver, but he was a race driver. There's a heck of a lot of things to beat out of somebody. You know, we've not quite got the race driver beaten out of Takamoto yet, which is why we're seeing these mistakes. I think it's as simple as that. that level of impatience. No, I've got this now. No, he's not. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. The guy has progressed. This was another massive growth. Look at Esa-Pekka. I mean, you know, honestly speaking, you know, before the rally even started, I thought, you know, he might go well for a while, but sadly, Esa-Pekka's just, you know, he's going to be in a great position. Then he's just going to stick the car off in a snowbank.
Historically,
because that's his form. Yeah. And he didn't. He actually kept it together. And listening to him at the stage ends, he was as glib and smart with his comments, you know, all the clever comments that he makes, and they're very funny. I love them. But there was less of them this weekend. He was more concise. He was more focused. And that's it. Katsuta as well was a little bit more focused, but still a little bit gushing, a little bit too excitable. And you've got to pull that in and maybe that's not quite what I'm saying is not what's happening, but he does need to calm down and be patient. If he'd been patient, that fight would have gone on. It was the first man to blink, and he blinked awful early.
So one man who was patient, who did rein it in, Adrian Formo. What a drive from him for M-Sport as well.
Yeah. Superb. Absolutely.
And I'm so happy to say that I tipped him so strongly in last week's podcast.
What did he do right? I mean, we're talking about patience here, about actually driving to the conditions.
It was exactly
and not
that,
too far in front.
Exactly what George just said. You know, all of those character traits that Taka needs to develop, Formo absolutely displayed all of them. Patience, common sense, you know, not risking everything when you don't need to. And just almost, I would say, George, driving within himself. You know,
it kind of is. He was measuring the risks. Where can I take the chances, and where can't he? Still made the fastest time, for goodness sakes. He was pushing where he felt he could, and then pulling it back in. It's that overview, that global picture they have of the event of each stage in their head. I mean, these drivers, it used to be that, you know, when I started a stage myself, I would know that stage. I'd have wrecked it three or four times back in the day. Like Sweden, Finland, I wrecked every stage four, some of them five and six times. And you envision the stage and you know where it's going to be tricky. Now I'm on the rally, that incredibly fast bit over three crests with crash barriers down each side up on the edge of a ridge, and then it sweeps down into a series of tighter corners. And you're already thinking, okay, I need to be careful coming through there, because I'll be at the top end of fourth, thinking about fifth gear, and do I really want to just go for fifth or just hold fourth, brake, make sure the car's stable to get down through there? Because if I make a mistake at that point, there's no recovery from it. And that's what you've got to have figured out in your head before you even start the stage. There's a long view, and then there's the instant view that you're getting of the 300, 400, 500 yards in front of the car that you're dealing with. Through the notes, through your own, you know, picturing where the road's going, and your own built-in knowledge and recall of the stage from the recce, and all the videos that they watch.
I think, you know, it is very early to talk about Formo as a reformed character, but he sits third in the championship after two rounds and two very strong performances. You know, Monty, he wanted to go there and he wanted to show the world that he was redemption man. And he kind of contained that, if you like, and drove a very sensible opener and a brilliant second round. What he needs to do now is go to Safari, which is undoubtedly one of his favourite rallies, loves the country, loves the place, will be absolutely delighted to go back there. You know, he needs to be looking at another podium, because, you can look at the top three for this year of Thierry, Elvin and Oit. It's quite likely one of those three is going to have an issue on Safari. So just be there, you know, be there at this kind of 95% pace.
There is another element to Safari this year, which is completely unknown and unexperienced. It's not just the weather, David, it's the temperature. We're now going at a very warm time of the year where the temperatures can get up to 35 degrees. The last 3 years we've been there, a warm day's been 26, 27 degrees. So it's 10 degrees warmer, potentially. Now, it was 6 years I went to Safari Rally before I saw a wet one, and then it was a proper wet one. So we could also see a lot more wet stages. I think I would put Ford on a pedestal. I would put Malcolm on a pedestal and say, Malcolm, this one has to be yours. I don't know how much resource they've got to put into it. I would be taking my two drivers, and I would phone up Ian Duncan, and I would make sure that Adrian and
Gregoire.
Gregoire go for a very nice dinner with Ian Duncan and let Ian Duncan regale them of all the pitfalls and all the silly things that can happen. And I guarantee you, Ian knows every single meter of every single stage they're doing and all the characteristics, and that would be a very worthwhile dinner for them.
Yeah, but FOMO was just absolutely
tremendous.
On the money.
Absolutely.
Totally on the money.
On the money, yeah. And just to hark back to that composure and that ability and that knowledge and resource that he dug deep to find, that patience. Katsuta, last stage, again, another obviously very, very risky bit of a stage right near the end of the long stage where he basically got a little bit out of, like, carrying a huge amount of speed, driving beautifully, just a little bit crossed up when he hit a compression and it flipped the car around. Phenomenally lucky to survive, but of course it dropped him away out of the running and cost him quite a bit. And again, sadly, it had been a good day.
Yeah.
Shall we wrap up?
I mean, what did that cost him? Was it a minute?
Yeah.
Pretty well. Yeah.
Shall we wrap up the other championships that were in action? WRC2 and a win for Oliver Solberg, effectively a home win for him.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
it is absolutely worthwhile to talk about on on Friday to sit third overall. Yep, of course.
Yeah, that was tremendous. Leveraging every little bit of an advantage.
Exactly. Had a bit of an advantage.
But honestly, David, I thought before he even got halfway through the day, he's going to bin it, because he was complaining bitterly about how terribly he's driving, how awful the car is, X, Y, Z. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I do have Oliver's phone number, and I nearly phoned him on a road section. I thought, get a grip, man. I didn't do that because it's not the right thing to do to anybody. But crikey, you know, he did a great job. But again, although he was getting emotive and emotional and not happy with his performance, he, on the stages, he did trust himself. He relied on himself. He did, you know, rely on the inner core of solid performance. And although he was obviously getting very upset with himself, he wasn't actually.
But I don't think he was, George. I think any driver that comes off a stage that thinks, I've missed four or five braking points or whatever, they're frustrated, and that's the first thing they reach for.
And also, the
road was evolving quite quickly. The grip was becoming more inconsistent and there was more gravel coming through. So, you know, he's looking in the same way that his father, Petter, and his mum, Pernilla, they analyze everything to the nth degree. And that's what you get. You get an immediate kind of download from Oliver of exactly what's happened in that stage. And you get absolute ruthless honesty from them.
Yeah.
But still, third overall on Friday night was just insane.
What a reward. It was fantastic.
The first time it's ever happened to see a Rally 2 car at the end of a day there. And, you know, again, everything we've said about EP, the composure that Lappy showed across Saturday, Sunday, that was exactly Oliver. You know, he had a lead to defend over Linnemeyer or Sami Payari.
He just nibbled away the tiniest little margin for most of the stages. He just managed to just nibble a little bit more and give himself that bit of comfort on the last day, where he basically just didn't have to make a mistake. But in those conditions, well, Sunday, of course, was on much, much better conditions, but still tough.
Yeah.
I'd say
it was obviously first round of juniors as well, Lise, and Johansson, you know, good win for him. But this is the biggest field of junior drivers we've had, I think, probably ever.
Great.
It's epic. And it was encouraging to see Robert Jorgensen finish second. He's obviously one of the FIA drivers, the Rallystar drivers, And then amazing as well that Eamon Kelly up in third, a podium on his first time in juniors. That was great. There was so much to talk about throughout the junior field that we could probably do a podcast on its own for those guys. And we will do more and more coverage of juniors because it is a huge field.
It's tremendous.
And
you know, as well, there's kind of progression. Proper progression. You look at the final stage. Max Smart is up there, second quickest. It's good. And there's a lot to talk about in there. So we will dissect juniors through the season. But just like every aspect of Sweden, that competition just delivered. It was fantastic. But we need to get to points and we need to get to Sunday.
Yes, let's get to points and let's get to Sunday. So comments have been made about the fact that Elvin was able to improve his position by a great run on the Sunday. But this is the first time we've seen the new point system really, the cogs really kick in on it. I think it's made it exciting. And after such a difficult weekend for Elvin at the front, clearing the road as a snowplow, mm-hmm. it was great that his rally wasn't over when he knew that he was going to be running first on the road.
Being interesting to question him now. He wasn't really in favour of it beforehand for the very reasons that he got the best points this weekend. So, but he was the beneficiary. But look, what a fantastic event he had. I mean, the guy drove with real mettle, real intelligence, had that curveball flung at him by Thierry on the first day. Good for Thierry for doing it. Brilliant for Elfin just to absolutely handle it. And then on the last day, he actually showed something that we were desperate for him to show event after event, which we never see. He pushed himself out right on that limit. He didn't quite manage it on the last stage. He just slightly overcooked what was just about the last corner of the rally. But what a fantastic recovery. And he showed some real mettle and went for it. And you know what? It was actually really rewarding to see it. And I'm happy that he did it. And I think he was deserving of maximum points in a strange way.
I agree 100%. And you know, Elvin Evans, as we all know, is nothing if not absolutely true to himself. And I sent him a message on Sunday. Obviously, I wasn't on the event. Just saying, great job. And I can confirm via a fairly spicy message back that he is still not a fan of the point system.
Very good.
Regardless of, and you know, that's Elvin to his core, isn't it? He's, as we say, set his stall out, and just because it's favoured him this time, he's not going to change his opinion.
No, good lad.
I think it absolutely did. I was completely conflicted on Sunday because I came away from there thinking, yes, I get the point system. Elvin deserved that.
Yeah.
He drove brilliantly and his event had been compromised on Friday for whatever reason, but he got a reward. And suddenly I thought, well, is that just because he's a Brit, because I like him, because I don't know. But actually, it's not. He drove, he earned those points. And we talked at the top of the show about, you know, rules are rules. You've got to do what you can within the rules. That's exactly what he did. But actually, you know, I think that Elvin didn't actually throttle back throughout the event. You know, people incorrectly talk about him having a fairly quiet Saturday. No, he didn't. He was absolutely on it through Saturday. That's how he took a minute and a half back off Lappy to come within half a minute of winning the event again. So
if the points had been the other way, David, Elfin would have scored 18 points for being second in the rally, and he would have scored four points for the super special stage. So he would have been 22 points instead of 24.
And EP would have been just a 25. Did he get a... So he would have finished three points behind Lappy.
So there's not much in it then.
There's not a lot in it. The point I was coming to was I sat in the office and thought, yep, I get it. That's that points thing. I'm kind of on board with that now, ish, within reason. Walked out and then sat down to supper last night. And Ollie, my son, came down and said, what's this points thing about? I don't get that at all. He said, Lappy won the rally, but didn't get nearly as many points as El. And I thought, oh, God. And Ollie is, you know, he's the kind of the casual observer who would have seen everything on social. And he just kind of thought, oh, bugger. Yeah, maybe we have got it wrong. You know, if we're confusing the next generation, or at least 15.
We have to let it run. We've got to run it through a whole season, a whole cycle, as it were. Because, you know, if you have got a dominant driver that can win a rally halfway through the year and then consider, you know, going off and playing in another sport, then there's something not right with the point system. So I think closing the gaps between...
Or not right with the sport, Lise. Yeah. And you know, I agree. Let's let it roll out. But also, let's not stop looking, because it was more than just the points that caused Calais to walk away for this year. So we need to dig deeper and really unearth exactly what is going on. So jury for me remains kind of out on the point system, but I am very glad. And ultimately, it gave us something to talk about, didn't it? You know, what could have been potentially a slightly mundane Sunday, you just kept seeing, like you said, George, Alvin just kept finding the pace and
he did.
Building it.
He really delivered on Sunday massively. It was very, very rewarding to see that because he did he did dig deeper, and you know he is Mr. Consistency in that, you know. He channeled his inner Adrian Formo this weekend, you know, or Adrian channeled his inner Elfin, perhaps, you know, to do that. And that's what you've got to do in rally, because it's a longer game and there's so many risks. And you know, the likes of Ott Tanak and Kalle Rovanperä, you know, they're normally brilliant at judging those risks. But the first day of Swedish rally caught them both out in very, very tricky conditions. They lent on their luck too much. And that is what Elfin is unprepared to do. He's unprepared to do that.
That's David's signal that he has another meeting to get to, which I think is probably...
No, that's George. That's
George. George is...
Me? No, it was me.
George is
Sorry,
literally firefighting, yes. probably
yeah,
something.
Yeah, works already. Yeah, I am actually. Yeah, but that's okay. We'll figure that out.
Well, we do need to kind of wrap
it. But so. No, Elfin did do that fantastic job at the end. There were some incredible drives. All these Finns that came forward: George Linnemay, Rupi Korhonen, Mika Haikala, Lauri Juna, driving absolutely brilliantly. Emil Lindholm even had, I think, the odd flash of brilliance in there. But the one for me, that the unsung hero of the event for me, sorry, I was being very anoraki this weekend, Jan Solans.
Right.
That's a surprise for you. He made some fastest times. He made some brilliant times in there.
Yeah.
And the fact that he could do that in a car, he's maybe not quite come, but quite clearly there's a little bit of development work to do with that car yet, which is a surprise in one way. Maybe that car's already peaked. I don't know. But... I think he did an incredible job in there, actually, this weekend.
Yeah.
Flashes of brilliance, anyway.
The other one that I was going to say as well is, you know, we talked about fastest times, and we should remember Thierry Neuville did a great job as well to bring everything back.
He absolutely did.
And to make time up. Yeah. You know, let's forget about what happened on Friday now. Whatever happened, happened. Yeah. We're in for a great year and a great championship, and he leads
absolutely
the championship leaving here. So... let's get on with it and let's enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, he had the toughest of starts to this event.
Yeah.
And he bottled it for five stages and then basically said, I've had enough of this. And good on him for doing that, because it you know, it maybe puts him in a tough place. But Thierry, history doesn't care about that. That was a bit of rallymanship.
Or it was a
fuel pressure problem, whatever. I don't care. You did a brilliant job, and you pulled a result out of a fire. You know, potential. It would have been so easy for him to have done what Ott and Kalle did, and the same for Elfin. Those first two cars really do absolutely clean the road. You know, the first car will lose a second or 2 seconds per kilometer to the second car. The second car will lose a second a kilometre to the third car. The fourth car will lose half a second a kilometre to the third car. So it gets better, exponentially better, as the road clears.
Yeah.
So in the toughest of conditions, both Thierry and Elfin did a brilliant job. Elfin had that, you know, first on the road sprung on them. Were they sleeping? Maybe they weren't expecting that. Maybe it was a genuine problem. As we said, as I pointed out, I've witnessed... probably a very similar thing happening in Finland two or three years ago. The fact that their chief engineer could come on and talk so eloquently about it. How come they know there's a problem there and it's not fixed? You know, what's going on there? That doesn't sound right. And it sounds like it's been around for a while.
It's part of the sport. Let's enjoy it and let's keep talking about it. It's given us plenty to talk about, plenty to enjoy.
I love a little bit of mystique.
Yep.
I'll wrap up with one comment. Thank you, Thierry Neuville.
Yeah,
I think you're spot on.
Thank you, Rally Sweden, for giving us plenty to talk about, plenty to watch. Fantastic pictures on dirtfish.com. Go and check out the website for everything. There's some lovely tributes as well to Craig Breen. I think we'll talk more about that as the year goes on.
Thank you, George. Thank you, David. And if you want to get in touch, at Dirtfish Rally is the place to come. Dirtfish.com will keep you in touch with all the rally news and views that you need to be across. As a hardened rally fan like myself, Lisa O'Sullivan, we will be back to preview the Rally of Kenya, but next week it's the Rally of Nations, so Mexico will be centre stage as we bring you the next edition of Spin the Rally Pod.